Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, we're talking about some of the game-changing moments we've had in e-commerce that led us to develop the framework that we now have. So let's get started. Hi, Ian. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Excellent. How are you doing?
I'm good. So this week, what we wanted to cover was kind of like our journey to the framework that we talk about in the book and basically our methodology. And whenever you come up with something that works, I find that it's always come from those epiphany moments where you're kind of like, you've been beating yourself against a, you know, a brick wall or, a, you know, not getting anywhere. And then suddenly something has happened, or sometimes almost by accident, and you've broken through and you've gone, whoa, what just happened? And I think we've had quite a few of those moments over the past 15 years that we've kind of gone, well, that, you know, sometimes it happened and it was like huge and we're like, we didn't know why at the time. And then we had to reverse engineer what had actually happened.
And you look back, sometimes you don't realize at the time, you know, only you have to, you know, discuss it after and think, ah, that was what happened. That was the big change, the game changer.
Yeah. Wasn't it? And I think, Even invert it as well, and we've had things where things have gone horribly wrong, and then we've reversed kind of like unexpectedly, and it's gone, oh, well, that happened because we changed this, and then that was you know the reason. So that's what we kind of ended up putting into our methodology, is what, because everybody's looking for, you know, decent improvements. It's all, you know, it's all very well going out there and making little tweaks and little here, and that's fine. But ultimately, if we want to win the game, we have to be adding things that are adding like 10% or 20% or even more to actually grow the business into a meaningful way, because you need that meaningful margin and the arbitrage to be able to go after the paid traffic and get it.
I mean, it depends where you are, doesn't it? I think if you're doing, you know, £1 million or £500,000, you know, you can have those game changes that then lead you onto that journey to 5 million or 10 million. But if you're doing 25 million or 30 million, you know, you don't necessarily need game changes. You need smaller things. Because the numbers are, you know, more efficient. But
there's definitely those phases, isn't there? You know, what gets you from zero to about 300k a year is probably going to be different. That gets you from 300 to like 800, and then what gets you over 800 to like multiple millions. There's slightly different phases and slightly different mechanisms for your growth. But I think let's talk through some of the game changing moments that we've had with certain e-commerce sites, and then that people should probably learn from that and maybe think about their own sites to think about, does that apply to me? So what's the first one you want to talk about?
I think I've just jotted down about seven or eight ones that if I look back, I think were so interesting. And I think these seven or eight ones did lead us to actually figuring out the framework. And I think probably one of the biggest ones was a car part retailer who was literally doing nothing. Let's say nothing, but I don't know, doing about £500,000, £1 million a year.
Yeah.
And done that for a while, you know, probably 2 or 3 years without much growth. And we realized that they had, their buying window was quite short because it's a distressed problem solving purchase. So we thought, well, we've got to give them a reason to act now, we've got to give them a reason to buy now. And we massively upped the ante with the offer architecture, because we could see that the stat that was low was their basket to checkout stat. So people were leaving things in the basket and not coming back. And so we needed to give them reason to act now. And with that, we applied the offer architecture. So we gave them a reason. It was a massive offer. We only had four hours because we only had 4 hours to get the sale. And that just, I mean, it pretty much doubled. It worked, like, it won't work for all businesses, but it worked well because we had a 4 hour buying window because it's like a distressed purchase. Mm-hmm. And I think it tripled revenue. I don't think it was doubling revenue. I think it tripled it.
It was insane. It was insane. Yeah. It was like we kind of just, you know, like something resonating. It was like we just hit the resonation frequency and it had gone boom. And it was like, what just happened? And it was then, because once you got that, we could then put that in front of all the audiences on Facebook and all the audiences on Google AdWords, and we could put it on. So we had a recruitment offer then that just worked. Mm. And for whatever reason, that offer architecture was the game changer that turned that business into a huge business, which eventually, you know, became the business it is today and got gobbled up by lots of different types of corporates, you know, because it got so big that it became such a big business.
It became a bit on the side for the company to actually a major part of their business.
Became the thing.
So that was a big one. And I think the next big one was...
Hang on, just before you go on from that. Sorry. What was the... So, like, because I think a lot of the time, you know, there's a resistance to that. So what, when you were discussing that with them, what was the pushback? What was their worries about doing it?
I think they felt that by if we go down this route, people will always want a deal, always want a discount. Mm. So if we initially recruit with a discount, then we're going to be stuck as that.
Yeah.
And I said, look, your customers they're only buying twice or three times a year. So the average lifetime customer value, when we say lifetime customer value, it's how many times in a 12-month period they buy. Mm. You know, the average is like 1.5 times a year across most e-commerce sites. So it's not massive. So it's like, well, you know, if we can recruit 4 times the amount of customers for the same money, the same cost,
then ultimately obviously, the same price. So what is the danger? Like, what's the danger they're thinking of? Because I think that's an interesting point. You're saying that think they're always going to have to discount. So let's say their price is
£100. That it's going to decrease the desirability or credibility of their brand.
Right.
They think it's going to jeopardize that.
And what will happen if their brand is jeopardized? What's their actual worry? Their worry is they're going to sell less. Is that right?
Yeah, I think they're worried that they're going to sell less, and it'll affect the loyalty, the lifetime customer value. But then I think, well, if you're worried about lifetime customer value, well, you can only have that worry if you've got customers on your house file in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find a recruitment methodology that works, you know. And if you've got that right, then you can focus on.
Because I hear that a lot.
Customer value.
I hear that a lot. They're worried about the brand. They're worried about the loyalty. So they're worried about the brand in terms of, because what a brand should do is the vehicle to get people to buy, isn't it? That's what a brand should do.
Mm.
It should get people to buy, the right people to buy continuously. I guess they're worried about that the sale is going to be a one-off thing. They'll get a spurt of sales and then it won't happen. But in this case, were their fears founded? Was it a true fear?
Not at all. No, because, you know, we architected the price so that we were able to do these discounts. So we essentially played with the price to be able to push it, to be able to have bigger discounts, and we maintained the margin. Mm. So we factored it in, and it was just that great reason to buy. I mean, it worked for this.
So actually what happened is the brand grew because it was in front of more people, was getting in front of many more people because the offer architecture allowed us to spend a lot more paid traffic and more recruits. So the brand actually grew massively. The second thing was people bought more often because the offer architecture was good. So it was like,
and we had
opposite.
A massive cows file. You know, we had a huge customer because we were recruiting so much more efficiently. We had a huge house file, and really, then it just the existing house file just took care of itself, really, because we had a good product, we had good price, good availability, we had a good system of emailing. You know, so it just took care of itself. So we focused on recruiting, and we knew that actually, you know, the lifetime customer value would actually work because we had a good product. That isn't always the case, is it? But actually, that moves me on to the next story, which was a game changer, which was a men's fashion retailer.
Yeah.
And this particular one, this client, you know, he said, look, well, we think we can recruit okay because we got the recruitment, you know, quite well. We're running at a 5x return on ad spend generally for non-brand. So we were recruiting profitably, you know, and comfortably, but we wanted to get the existing customers to spend more. And so we looked at all the mechanisms. The lifetime customer value was quite low. It was like 1.2, and we needed to get it up to 2. Basically, that was the goal. So we looked at the things that we could do to get the lifetime customer value up, and essentially we said, okay, well, let's give them free delivery on there for the next 12 months for the customers that have just bought, because we were like, well, they're not buying again. Only 1.2 people are buying. Let's just give them free delivery. We don't have to pay for the recruitment costs anymore on Google, you know, Google Shopping or AdWords. So let's just make it easier for them to come back. So we gave them free delivery, and we gave them loyalty cash on the next purchase. So we gave them a cash back. So it was £20 we gave them. Their average order value was 110. So we gave them £20, which is basically 18% cash percentage off.
I think they couldn't spend it on something less than a certain amount, could they, or something like that? They couldn't do an average order value.
We just made it out because we knew that by the time they'd come in, there wasn't that much stuff on the website that was less than that price.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We just opened it up. We said, hey, you can use it. So we gave them cash back of £20, and that expired, and then we gave them the VIP. And that meant that it really dramatically increased the lifetime customer value. That 12-month free delivery was a real good hook, and it made a big difference to the repeat business.
You think you missed one of the hooks as well, which was that those points, those cash that they gave them, they expired. So we triggered the psychological impulse, which is the fear of loss, which is a lot bigger in humans. You know, we're much more worried about losing £5 note than gaining a £5 note. It's just the way we're built. And so by giving them that cash and then saying, oh, if you don't buy something by the end of the month, you're going to lose it, we triggered the fear of loss. And then it also gave us another reason to email them about the loyalty points. Because otherwise, you know, you get the loyalty points here, you've got your loyalty points, and it's like, what's the excuse to email them again? All the emails
reinforced the fact that they had, remember, you've got free delivery. Oh, remember, you've got X amount of loyalty cash. And the loyalty points were, the key thing for loyalty points was, it wasn't loyalty points. It was the cash that they had to spend. They were going to lose it. And, you know, no one cares about a loyalty point. And also no one was interested in earning loyalty points. They only cared about having them to spend. So we didn't push them on recruitment. You know, no one's going to buy something from you from the first time because you're going to give them the loyalty points off. They're not interested. So everybody should earn loyalty points automatically, and then the power is spending them.
Yeah,
that's what worked, and we really rammed that down the face. We made that really, really visual, like big. Every email, like the order confirmation email, had a huge thing. You have now got £23 to spend on your.
I think you simplified it as well, didn't you? Because at the beginning it was just points, and people were like, well, what's the point? Yeah. You actually turned the points into cash.
No one cared. Yeah, we turned the points into cash, and we made it really big and really visual. And we realized that the power was that everybody should earn them automatically and then have them. And then go, oh, wow, I've got £23 of cash to spend on the next purchase, and they're going to run out. Wow, that's amazing.
And did you do any things like where you doubled the points for the weekend, or, you know, like your points are worth more?
Well, we did it. So if they hadn't bought within a 6 month period, we emailed them and said, hey, we're going to double your loyalty cash for a week. And if you don't use it, then you've lost it forever.
So basically, that's your last.
Yeah, that was our last offer. Yeah. So we used the loyalty cash as our retention and our reactivation offer, because it was something about having cash to spend that was more. It felt nicer than just giving them a discount.
Mm.
You know, it felt more sincere, that it was more tangible, and it worked better. So, you know,
it's like something of theirs, isn't it?
To give.
It's something of
theirs. Yeah, the discount was easier as a recruitment model, because, you know, discount was quite nice because you can apply it across lots of different products. But then when you become a customer, giving them cash felt more real, and it worked better as a reactivation and a retention offer. And obviously we emailed a lot more. So lifetime customer value went up a lot.
Yeah.
And I think, there's another one that I think is really interesting. Another story, if I may. Unless you've got anything to add on that one.
No, that's fine. Let's keep going.
Well, I think for those who have met me will have heard me say this many, many times. And for those who've met me will know who this brand is, because you'll all know it, because it's a very well-known homeware brand. But this particular story was about a company that had been stuck at 5 million for 3 years in a row. And they just could not get past this glass ceiling. They literally said, hey, this is a glass ceiling. We just stuck at 5 million. And no matter what we spend, we just can't get past it. Like, we can't spend anymore. We're stuck. And the answer was so obvious when you looked at the numbers. And the fact is that their average order value was £35. And it was too low. And the lifetime customer value was only 1.5 times a year. So for an average order value of £35 and a lifetime customer value of 1.5, it's really small.
Hang on now. Let's dig into that. So why is it too small? What does that mean?
Well, because you tend to find that if you're looking at Google Shopping, for example, which is a very good example, you know, the lowest point of cost per conversion tends to be about £10. So it costs about £10 for a typical sale. So, you know, if you've got, you think about your margin and your returns and your VAT and your tax, you know, it's not enough, but it's not a linear. So if you're selling something for £30 and the minimum cost is going to be about £10, if that product was £100, it doesn't go as like a linear cost per conversion. It's more efficient. It's easier to sell something for £100. That £10 doesn't go up equally with the spend, with the actual cost of the product. So essentially, it's more efficient to do so. And we said, look, your average order value is too low. You know, you're not going to be able to spend any more money. And you're spending, you know, X amount, you're only getting 5 million, we've got to change the metrics. So we said, okay, well, look, there's only two ways you get your average order value up. It's either more expensive products or it's more products per order. Now, the problem with your products per order is there's only so much you can get out of it. You know, so you can do your 3 for 2s, your mix and match, you know, but actually, you know, you probably get maybe 10 or 15% maximum. So, which is great because it's kind of free money. So you should all do it. But you're not going to get the game changers. You know, that would have taken our average order value to like £43, £44. It still wouldn't have been enough. So the other way to get the average order value up is more expensive products. And that's what we did with this client. We said, look, you've got to have to go out and get core ranges. And we went and we did and we looked at the market. We say, this is what we think people are buying.
And what were those core ranges, for example? Was it with lighting?
Well, mirrors, it was like lighting. It was lighting, chandeliers, mirrors, and oak stools, or stools in general, and also rugs. And so we got rid of chandeliers because they were too hard to post out. Mirrors, they were too hard to post out, and breakages. Lighting was the same thing. And so we looked at, we were left with stools and rugs. Mm. And so we went after stools, like kitchen stools, and they did, and rugs, and they did incredibly well. And so we pretty much trebled the average order value overnight. And it was the same people that were buying, the people that were coming on and buying the, you know, the little pasta jar and the soap dish. They were the same people that came and bought this oak stool for £90.
Mm.
So all of a sudden, you know, we'd taken the average order value up by, you know, nearly treble. And that allowed us, the marketing budget then was so much more efficient because all of a sudden unprofitable campaigns became profitable. So that same marketing budget.
Well, if I remember rightly, they worked harder. They couldn't make Google AdWords work at all before any of this. They couldn't, they would basically lose money on Google AdWords. So therefore it wasn't a thing. So as you added these kind of recruitment products, because you don't necessarily need to recruit with all your products. Once you've got those recruitment products that work, that's what you push, which builds your house file, which then you can sell to.
Yeah.
Sell other things too. So it's almost like if you think about what we, you know, in digital marketing, we talk about the self-liquidating offer. Your recruitment products are ones that you need to self-liquidate for. So you and self-liquidate means that the marketing you spend on them pays for the products that allows you to recruit a customer. And obviously that's only worth doing if you know that people are going to buy again at some point. If they aren't going to buy again, let's say you're selling like jewelry or something like that, where it's very, you know, people tend to buy once a year, then obviously you need to make the profit on that first sale. But if you do have a lifetime customer value, like a homeware store or clothing or things like that, you've really got to focus on that, what that self-liquidating recruitment offer is. Because if you can get that working, and say you spend £1,000 and you get £1,000 back as a business, and literally you are exactly the same point, apart from the fact that customers got one of your products, you are adding customers to your list effectively for free. So that you'd go, well, I'm going to spend £100,000 this month and get £100,000 back in terms of, you know, actual, you know, you're not overall losing any money in terms of like cost of sales and all that kind of stuff.
The answer is
you'd just go for it, wouldn't you?
You go, yeah, you do. You know, you spend as much money as you can until your metrics don't work, and then you change your metrics. And that's like in that case, you know, the average order value was too low. So like we spent as much money as they could. They couldn't spend any more. They were stuck at 5 million. So we had to change the KPIs. And that was the average order value.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you work. If you really understand the numbers, you go, well, you know, if I spend a pound and I get £5 back and that was guaranteed, how many pounds would you spend? You'd spend as much as you possibly could. You know, you wouldn't just go, well, I'm gonna try and spend £1,000. You'd go for it.
That's where it becomes.
Until it failed.
The system that we've created is very simple, not necessarily easy or ways to do, but it's very simple in that it breaks it down into what you need to change in order to make the business grow. Because I think sometimes people get very obsessed with, like organic traffic or something like that. But ultimately, if you want to make your business really grow, you have to get paid traffic working. And then therefore it is maths. It is a simple math, and it's not a complicated math equation. It's just the average order value times the conversion rate. And then you've got to take into account how much that costs to get recruit that customer. And if they,
well, it's,
if they,
it's how much it costs to recruit a customer and how much that customer's worth to you in a lifetime.
Hmm.
They're the two basic math that you need to focus on.
Yeah. You need to work back to get to the point where you know, to make this business work with my numbers, I need to hit a return on advertised spend, which is called a ROAS, of times 5. So you'll know that you break even maybe at a ROAS of 3 or 4. So you know if you hit 5, you're making money. So therefore, then you can see whether that's possible. And the thing is, if you go to like an AdWords agency or something and say, look, oh yeah, to break even at my ROAS needs to be 20, they'll probably go, that's not going to happen. And then you're going to go, well, okay, what do I need to change in the fundamentals of my business so that I can make money at a ROAS of 5 or 4?
Yeah, that's the question. You've got to, you know, rather than saying, oh, Google Shopping, it didn't work, you've got to actually change the business to make it work.
Because if it didn't work, it means that someone else is taking that traffic and making profit out of them
at a much
greater level.
Because it's mathematical. And the problem with natural SEO and Facebook to a certain extent is it's a little bit more uncontrollable. I would take Facebook out of that, but certainly SEO, you know, it's like it's not controllable. It's cherry on top. But where Google Shopping and pay per click works is because it's mathematical. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
I invest in SEO in our own sites, not because like I need it to work, but it's like, well, it's a cherry on top. I'll have it.
Yeah.
When it comes, and I do get something from it, but I can't control it. I can't go, oh yes, next month it's gonna. I'm doing nothing, and next month I'm gonna get 20 grand from it because I've.
You might lose it. Links. I mean, and obviously we've all read stories about being slapped. You know, that's the problem. You know, by Google. You know, and all of a sudden your rankings drop. Business over. You can't rely upon it.
No. And I think it's the same thing with paid. The only thing you own is your email list. The only thing you actually own is your email list. You know, Facebook accounts can be shut down. Google accounts can be shut down. Podcasts can be shut down.
Yeah.
SEO could be slapped. The only thing you really own is your email list. And therefore, that's why you should, if you can create a customer recruitment offer, self-liquidating offer that builds that email list, you've got currency. Your business has currency. And people will buy that business for its customer list.
Mm.
It's as fundamental as that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think I think probably the other one was when looking at the conversion rate. This is probably where our add to basket to checkout to orders stats originally came from, was when we started to analyze the conversion rates across all the clients. You know, we had some clients that were converting at 5%, some were converting at 2%, et cetera, et cetera. And it's when we started to then compare them and see, okay, what's the breakdown here? And obviously we split it down into the three, which is how many people added to basket, how many people went from basket to checkout, and how many people went from checkout to order. That was a big game changer.
Mm.
And I remember one particular brand, another massive brand that you'll all know, selling things in the kitchen. They had everything, you know, all their metrics were really good. You know, their average order value was great. Their lifetime customer value was good. The conversion rate was okay. But what was letting them down was their out-of-basket stat. You know, their basket to checkout, checkout to order were great, but their out-of-basket stat was low.
Mm.
And that was the focus that we needed to do. And straight away, we're like, right, we can see this is the bottleneck. You're out of basket stat. I think it was five, less than five. I'm saying with a business like this, with a good lifetime customer value, and a very loyal brand, your out of basket stat should be much higher than this. And that became the focus, and we just militantly focused around that, and straight away added 30% on top of the revenue. But had we not looked at the breakdown, we could have gone and focused on something completely different in the checkout, in the basket. And it would have been a waste of money. And, you know, it maybe would have realized after 2 years, but straight away we saw that the add to basket stat was low. We knew it was a bounce rate problem on the product page. And we had to work on that.
Well, if you can find, if it's a problem with the add to basket or the basket to checkout or the checkout to order, it very much tells you what anxiety the customer has that's stopping them from buying. You know, if it's an add to basket thing, it's either they can't find the product or they don't have the desire for it in the first place. Yeah. If it's a basket to checkout thing, it's sometimes a delivery thing or trust or how it's going to be delivered or what the returns policy is, or all that kind of stuff. And the checkout is often, checkout page is often like friction, literally in the checkout, making it difficult to actually transact or not offering the right payment.
Which is very rare. You know, but most of the time, by the time they get into the checkout, they're committed to buying. Yeah. You know, it's the first two stats that are the ones that drop. You know, the basket stat and the basket to checkout stat.
Sometimes you see checkout problems because people have skipped out some of the steps. Yeah. And so therefore they don't have the confidence and motivation.
Too early.
Yeah, and they haven't got them. They haven't got the confidence at the checkout. They haven't had some of their questions answered before they get there. So, you know, don't just think, oh, because my checkout page is poor, but it's because of a bad experience. It might be because they haven't been.
Yeah, well, we see this a lot with Shopify. We see it a lot with Shopify and Magento, actually, because they both like to take people from the mini basket straight to the checkout. And if you think about it, you know, if someone, you know, your customers are only buying from you maybe 1.5 times a year if you're lucky. You know, it might not be a quick shop experience. They want to be indulged. They have anxiety. They have pain points. And all you're doing, you take them straight to the checkout, and what you're showing them is a massive, horrible form with loads of boxes to fill in. No way. It's awful. You know, you take them to the baskets. You give them the reassurances. You can talk to them about scarcity and urgency and the returns policy and all the great customers that love you and the fact there's only a few left and all these sort of things. You know, you can do all the right things. You know, you're missing a very vital step out. You know, the notion in e-commerce that, you know, a 4-step checkout is better than a 5-step and a 5-step is better than a 6-step is absolute rubbish.
So in summing up, what we're saying is that the game changers came to us from big wins that we had, which we then translated into the kind of like sales funnel process for e-commerce stores, which allowed us to see which area, because once we had a game, a win, we would then look at the area that it has affected massively. So for example, the car parts one, I think would have been the add to basket. So we would have gone, right, for a customer like this, who had an add to basket of this before and now it's this, this is clearly where that can grow. And therefore, you know, you start to understand where to work. And I think it's just, it's just simple maths, isn't it? So what you need to work out is, what's your flow at the moment? What's your add to basket rate? What's your basket to checkout rate? Or even just more simply, because just go for add to basket and basket to order at first. What are those two? And then what's your average order value? And then you need to find out, what is a typical add to basket rate in your industry? What is a typical average order value in your industry? And armed with that information, you can then start to see where the weakness might be in your model, which is where you're going to grow. Now, I would say that anybody who's doing under 300K means that they probably haven't got paid traffic working properly. So therefore, if you haven't got paid traffic working properly, it's probably going to be either average order value or add to basket, because one of those two things is going to be holding you back. Or perhaps you've not even tried paid traffic, or you've tried it and it's gone, oh, that didn't work. It doesn't work for this, my business. And it's like, well, if your business wants to get to the next level, you have to take on board that problem, because that is the...
Well, no, it's like shutting your doors. Yeah. It's like someone's coming into a shop on the high street and saying, hi, have you got... you know, if you've got model XYZ and you go, yeah, it's over there, and they just walk out of the shop. They just shut the door and just leave. It's like, hang on, something really wrong. You know, and I think fundamentally it's about knowing, you've got to know what KPIs to look at. And obviously the main KPI we talk about is add to basket, basket checkout, checkout to order, average order value, traffic, lifetime customer value. And there's a few other things in there, isn't there? But they're the main speed ones. You've got to know what those are. And then you've got to know what they should be for your industry. Yeah. And obviously we've got that information. And then you need to know what happens when you tweak it. You know, how are we going to get to 10 million? You know, we're doing 3 million now. We want to get to, you know, 6 million next year and 10 million the year after. Well, what do those KPIs need to look like?
I think, you know, from working with your group as well, which I've started doing, I think that the most important thing for everybody to know when they're scaling their e-commerce business is what the big idea is. So once you've got hold of those KPIs, and once you know you've seen them and you've benchmarked them and you've worked out where, you have to understand what the big idea is that's going to be the game changer for the business. And then once you know what that big idea is, that should be your total focus in your business, that everybody around you, your whole team, you, everybody, actually is focusing on that game changer, and focus everybody on actually improving that, because that is when you actually get results. Rather than having, okay, I'm going to change, and the lifetime customer value at the moment. I'm going to tweak this, and I'm going to tweak the checkout. I mean, I'm going to do a little bit of SEO here, and I'm going to maybe to add that to the email list. It's like, no, what's the game changer that's going to make the difference?
And there's always one big thing. Mm. If you get that right, everything else sort of just takes care of itself. Mm. You've got to know what is the big. How are we going to go from 2 million to 17 million? You know, that's what we're working with a client right now. You know, that is in that position that they've got to go from 2 to 17.
Gosh,
you know, and you're not going to do that by accident. You've got to work on that big fundamental, game. Yeah.
And it's like what gets focused on happens. Because otherwise you become too scattergun and you're trying to do too many things and it doesn't necessarily matter. Okay, once you've done the big idea and it's happened, you will find the next big idea. But until you've done that, that will be the biggest area where you're just going to get this most leverage. And the trouble is what happens is people find a big idea and then that's what they need to do. Then it gets hard and they go, I don't know how to do it. But you can't then go and do something that's easy because you've got to keep going back to that big idea and you've got to keep hammering on that door because it will open because other people have done it. Other people have opened the door. You're not creating the wheel again. People have it. They have the model. You need to go and find it and you need to do it. Anyway.
Cool.
I think we'll finish there, but that's really good. Hopefully people have got a bit more of an idea about game changers and the model and the methodology. And if you haven't bought a copy of our book, please visit www.ecommercebook.co.uk. That'll get you into our community, into our Facebook groups, and we've got some bonuses for you as well. So if you haven't done that, please do. And I look forward to speaking to you next week, Ian.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Cheers.
Thank you very much.